King George, why don't you tell us how you got your start in music?
I just loved hearing music on the radio as a kid. Just always had my ear stuck to it, listening to all styles of music. And then I, in my teens, I just really pestered my dad, my father, to buy me a guitar. I really didn't even know how to play. I was probably about 15, I think. And yeah, after some a lot of pushing, he eventually got me one. And once I touched it, it was just amazing feeling. And I haven't, I've just been playing since. I had someone teach me the basics of guitar, and then from that point I taught myself. I haven't looked back. I just love it.
Now, being a guitar player myself, I got to ask you, I always curious about this with artists, especially guitar players. What kind of gear are you using currently?
I play Fender Strat.
Yes. Love the Strats.
I've got a Fender amp as well, but I also play with a Marshall stack, but the head is like a super bass head that I bought off this guy here in Melbourne. He had a shop he was closing down, and it's a super bass built in like early 70s or something. And it's just got an amazing sound to it. So really that's been my basic setup, and it's fairly simple. Yeah, having said that, I'm not a very good guitarist. I love playing guitar to write music. So I feel like I haven't mastered my instrument yet after all these years.
Well, I mean,
still got a lot of work to do.
You're playing guitar on your recordings. I mean, I think your guitar playing is brilliant. We just did a review of your video 904. A few days ago, and oh my God, whoever's listening to this, listen to that and check the hook out. I mean, I love the way the song starts and then just kicks in with that hook of a chorus. It's one of those few times where you can actually just say something was brilliant.
Well, thank you. Guitar wise, like I do play along with a guy called Chris White, who's been involved with King George for the last 2 or 3 years. I write the guitar parts. He's a guy that really helps me bring it to where it should be to a certain extent at times. And that song 904 is really a song about the love of playing music. And that's what I wrote it about. And it's getting some good feedback, which is really good.
Now, what's the title 904 represent?
Well, I think it's 2013, we went to and played Indie Week in Toronto, and that was the number of the apartment we were staying in. And that trip to Toronto was just, I loved it so much. And I started writing it about that time, because being away and playing music, doing what you love 24/7, and having so much fun in the apartment and all that stuff. So it was based around that. That was the starting point of the apartment and the number of the apartment that we stayed in. That's what the title's about.
It's kind of about the little things that trigger memories.
It's true. Nice.
But I mean, the song is just lush sounding, and it's got what I love about it too is because I'm a guitarist from the shredder generation. I started playing because of like Eddie Van Halen, stuff like that. And then when I got older, I started appreciating, other guitarists more, not because they were fast, but because they were melodic and they knew what to play. And this is one of those cases where every note on the guitar fits perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah. And guitar-wise, like, you know, my influences go from, you know, being really young and playing heavy music like Pantera and being into bands like Slayer and all that, then straight on to like U2. And you know, I've really loved all of that stuff. And I love trying to merge them at times as well. So,
Do you feel that happens with maturity? Because I totally agree with that. Not only agree with that, but I relate to it because, you know, like I went from bands like, you know, like Pantera, Megadeth, Anthrax and stuff, and then getting into, well, U2 and the Beatles and Led Zeppelin and start slowing down and everything else. And those artists are more about the song.
Yeah, that's true. I found early on, you know, with the heavier stuff, it's just going through being a kid and, you know, the energy and rebelling and this and that. But I did find, like, so with amongst friends, when I was shifting into more of a, you know, listening to some of the softer stuff, there were times when people say, oh, what's that stuff about, you know. But also it may depend on your environment. Like, I had older sisters who would be listening to, like, Simple Minds and stuff like that and some of those bands. Yeah, the emotion that comes out with some of that stuff and, you know, it's great. You know, I just love all styles of music, even, you know, even into the more of the poppier dance side of things, like Pet Shop Boys and all that stuff that I used to hear when I was a kid, but I was sort of too young to really remember it. And then as I get older, I'm like, well, this sounds familiar, you know, it's like deja vu. And then, you know, sort of circles back and I get into it. So I love all styles of music, which is great. Even sort of the European, or I got a Greek background, so into some of the old traditional Greek music and Mediterranean stuff as well. So
nice. Yeah. Now, do you think it's an artist such as yourselves duty to, as time goes by, to mature like that in your own right career wise so that you kind of grow with your audience?
But I just think for me, from a music perspective, there's no plan, as in when I'm creating or writing songs, it's just whatever's happening comes out. I think I try to improve in songwriting, but with the themes and what's coming out, it's more about what's going on around me and the environment and that. So for me, that's what I love about music. It's just I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, you know. I just try to take all whatever's going on and sort of that kind of reflects in my writing. The album that 904's come off, the theme along that is the album's called Love Songs and Medications, and is pretty much around about a time where a lot of people around me were going, you know, relationships were breaking down with people that I knew, and friendships were strained and all this and that. And the whole album's pretty much about, you know, relationships, love, and for different things, whether it be people, music, and all that. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that album is a departure from, let's say Pluto's or Prisoners of the Pluto Junction? Because you were talking, you know, I was reading when I was doing my research. You talked about how at that time that was a departure from what you were doing, you know, because you know, you said some parts of the album were sleazy, serious, heartbreaking, dark. I mean, it was a spectrum. Now, how would you describe that album from this new one? Like the differences?
The Prisoners of the Pluto Junction was interesting because, you know, the themes in that were a little bit, at times, there's a little bit more political. It was a little bit less mature in my sense. Like, I just feel it's not as polished as Love Songs and Medications. But with Love Songs Medication, it just seems to be more of a common theme, in my opinion. But you know, Prisoners of the Pluto Junction, that took so long to really put together because didn't realise I was really recording an album until myself and the drummer Michael, who's been on the King George journey from the beginning, we were just chipping away at songs and we sort of just got it together. Versus like Love Songs and Medications is a little bit more planning.
Do you think Love Songs and Medication has a more singular concept or a more focused concept than Prisoners of Pluto Junction?
Yeah, I think it does. Yeah. And, you know, songs like Broken Hearted Whispers and you know, even 904 and all that, like I just feel that they just hit the mark a lot more, you know, from a songwriting perspective. I kind of felt lucky enough, and even the guys I've been playing with, we got into a really good momentum to get the songs to sort of be true to their meaning. And I just feel they're a bit bigger sounding from an audio perspective. Mm-hmm.
Now, the cool thing, we have a lot of favorite artists in common. You know, like Bjork, U2, Faith No More, The Killers, stuff like that. You mentioned in your bio that Ox Tongue Baby is one of your favorite albums, and it's actually like one of my like top two, actually. So, I mean, because that is I look at it from a historical point of view. That is a band that had already conquered everything, and they threw all that away and rewrote the book again. You know, now with that being said, do you think that's something you could do, like reinvent yourself on every album? Because the songs like between, you know, Pluto and Medication are significantly different in and of their own right. So, I mean, I feel that you're already on your way, but do you feel that is a conscious thing, you know, and if so, is it a scary thing?
Yes, it is. I mean, because I guess because I sort of ride the wave of what's happening, God knows what I'm going to come up with next, I think. But that feels good not to be in control as much. But I think, you know, the way I'm heading now, I think, you know, sometimes I feel that I might be trying to look at introducing songs that are a little bit more stripped back or piano-based. I do have both – on both albums there's a bit of piano and all that. But I think that it all depends on what's going on around me. And I think that as I'm feeling now, I think the last show we played here in Melbourne – We changed things around it, but we played in a place called Chapel Off Chapel, which is like a theatre setup versus like, you know, a pub venue or anything like that. And we reintroduced some songs, one particular song, Hover, that was off the Medications album on piano, on the grand piano, which was really amazing to play. It felt really good. So I think, you know, I might reinvent things as the next time. But bands like U2 and albums like Ox Tongue Baby, like you just know that they just put everything into that record. And to be honest, it's probably one of the very few U2 albums that they actually completed. I think every time U2 release an album, like the album's never complete, you know. Even the Joshua Tree, you know, as the album goes on, it sort of fades away a little bit, you know,
I mean, I know exactly what you're saying because I always get the feeling that they abandoned it, yeah. You know, every time. And Ox Tongue Baby was like no filler whatsoever. It was like awesome from the first song to the last song.
It's a fantastic album.
Yeah, exactly. It. Now, Do you picture that? I mean, do you like like, okay, well, I'm trying to figure out a way to word this right, but you know, so let me word this right. Your next album, when it comes out, do you picture a significant progression as you did from Pluto to Medication? Do you picture like just as big a leap? Because you're one of those artists that seems like they like do a giant leap between one album to the next, and it's almost a different artist every time.
Yeah, I think so. And it's kind of like there's a lot of time between albums because yeah. It takes so long, and being independent and finding the money to record and all that. But I think there's a leap, and I enjoy playing with different people as well, and I get influenced by different things. So I hope that it gets taken to the next level with the next album. I really excited to do something. I'm more in the writing phase at the moment, so the songs are sort of coming out, but I think it'll be a while before I, you know, get back into the full recording mode.
Now, are you the type of artist that likes to take a few years and then just really put every note in its place? Or are you the type that, we just got off tour and stuff, we have a bunch of half-written songs, let's finish them up while recording them?
No, we try and really get it right, do a bit of pre-production. So I demo a lot of my songs, you know, in my home studio, and then send it out to Michael, Chris, and Ben, who helps us out on bass sometimes, and it needs to go through that, you know, rehearsal studio sort of test, rather than me putting a demo together and then going straight into recording an album. We don't work that way. But so I've been lucky enough to be playing with some good people around me, but we really try and get it spot on as much as we can. But then again, you know, there's when you're recording, you know, I think you can't be too prepared, because when you're recording, whether it be the guitar or the vocals, like there are things you can come up with in there with the vibe, and also depending on who's recording you as well. And I work with a guy called Malcolm Besley, and he's very good. He recorded both albums. And he kind of pushes me in the studio as well. He actually pulls me back a bit as well, because I actually kind of put too much into it. You know, I want to put like, you know, five guitars and in a chorus.
That's what I like to do too, except I do guitar solos.
So, all right.
And then I get everybody saying, "You're just showing off now, man." Yeah. You know. So, well, do you find that that's the key to some of your sound? Because I got that, you know, when I was listening to your music, is like you're disciplined.
I guess I put a lot of work into the sound. Malcolm and I sort of know what sound that we want. But when it may be like rhythm guitar, doing the rhythms is one thing, but with leads, for me, when I play a lead, I always picture it more of a string or a piano. When I'm playing the guitar, I don't always picture it as being a guitar. So since some of the leads are a bit, you could probably play it on a piano or a keyboard, you know. I try and step out of that mindset of what, you know, what I'm playing, and trying to mix things up a little bit as well. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, one question I always like to ask everybody that's an indie artist in such as yourself is, say like, you know, tomorrow one of the like big labels, one of the big three, like, you know, Sony, Universal, you know, or Capitol or Virgin or something like that, came up to you and offered you the standard first record contract, would you take it or would you not? It's a trick question, because the trick question lies in standard. Because standard, they do ask for a lot in return.
Yeah, I think, you know what, you never shut the door on anything. I think you need to look at what's in front of you, and a record label you know, they need to do their thing, and I think an artist needs to do theirs. And if everyone understands each other, where they're coming from, and there's good communication, you just never know. But I think as you go on as a musician, you know, a record deal is something that you know, you don't just get given a deal to do an album and then everything just happens automatically. Some artists may feel that, oh yeah, I've been signed, and then everything's just going to fall into place. I think people realise quickly that, oh, okay, I'm signed, but I've got to really work hard and keep on going. And I don't know. Look, I don't know. Be good to find out one day. But
it's good that you bring that up, because a lot of people don't realise that the labels are more hands off now than they used to be. That was the trick in the question, was standard first record deal. And basically what would have happened there was they would have given you $50,000 or $60,000 to do your record, but that record, the cost of making it comes out of that money they just gave you. And at the end of the day, what you're basically doing, you're paying for all that stuff out of that money they gave you. They recoup their money before you ever see anything back. And then it's split on a certain percentage. So they're leaving you alone, expecting you to come, you know, to come out with greatness.
That's right. And then, you know, what else comes with the package, you know, what, you know, marketing and image and this, and there's so many things, but, that's a trap for people at times, because once they realize they've got to pay that back through their sales, and the first album, you know, it may not break even. And then what happens is, I think artists feel that it just becomes something they stop love doing. And once you stop love playing music, then you're kind of doomed. So I think whatever healthy mix of things that keeps you enjoying music, and then also being able to manage the other side, the business side of things, which can be really frustrating.
Yeah, exactly. I've heard from a few people that have gone through that, where they've been signed, you know, they thought it was, oh man, we're, you know, we just talked to the Wizard of Oz, we're on Easy Street now, you know, and then it's like 5 months later, you know, it's like, you know, I ask them how it's like, and it's like, they say it's like 50 micromanagers join the band.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so I mean, and another trap is that people don't realize is most of the marketing before the album comes out and everything, all the buildup, they put on you. They're saying you're the one that has all your Twitter followers. You're the one that runs your Facebook page. You know, keep that going, and they'll check your stuff. Like, I've noticed you haven't tweeted today. You know, they will send you stuff like that, and then they're hoping where they're hoping that stuff strikes gold is if they give it to enough radio stations, then enough buildup comes up, and then MTV takes it, or Rolling Stone listens to it and stuff, and then that's where they're hoping the magic happens.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, though, on the other side of it is that it's like when people work in the corporate world, there's not much difference in the sense that what people work for, when they work for a big corporation, all the work that they do is owned by the corporation. And some people only last in a job for 3 years or 4 years. Nothing lasts forever, but I think sometimes artists, man, they might get signed and they feel that they should be signed to this label forever. And I think it's important, you know, I'm not trying to defend labels or anything like that, but I just think that, you know, I think an artist needs to understand that they are in it for a particular reason, and obviously money is the reason. And if you're both happy with that, then, you know,
yeah, and it's good that you say that too, because they do have to make money so that they can find more artists.
That's right. Yeah. So I think if younger artists are educated about that, knowing what's coming and what everyone knows what their motivation is, then things can work. I think that could be a way to go about it. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well. you know, bring it, you know, to bring up that point too, that's also why the labels are very, very protective. And we have the RIAA here in the States, which will actually, they've gone so far as to sue people because somebody loaded a YouTube video up of somebody's wedding and is playing a copyrighted song in the background. You know, that the that everybody's dancing to, and then that's caused, you know, $1 million lawsuits. So what is your opinion on that? I mean, would you give your music away for free if you could, or are you pretty protected?
I do. Okay. I give it away. I if someone's really keen to listen to some King George stuff, I'm happy to give it to them. I think it's artists need to really, in my opinion, in this day and age, work out a way to even, you know, get different levels of income, and whether it be working part-time or doing something or generating some other income out of their music, teaching other people to play guitar or something like that. Because I think, you know, when you've got music online, you it's guaranteed, like, it's going to get ripped. It's going to get – people are going to steal it or whatever. Whether you like it or not, it's kind of going to happen. So, I think you know, artists need to be sort of like, well, you know, people out there might fight it, and associations who represent musicians may be able to come up with ideas to protect music, pirates and all that. But I think, you know, it's just the way it is, unfortunately, you know. And I think, yeah, I don't mind giving away my music. I mean, you'd wish sometimes that, you know, there was something more coming back, but I just get off on people sort of enjoying it. So, yeah.
Well, and also, too, I think people in general are good. You know, like most people, like most people are, you know, most people in general, like, know right from wrong. And I don't think people consciously do it, because here's the thing. And what I mean by do it is steal music, because here's the thing, too. We're given the tools freely to do it. I remember when I was a kid, you know, in high school, this will tell you how old I was. This is back in the like early 90s. You know, we used to have, you know, me and my friends used to get together because of dual cassette decks. Remember dual cassette decks? And like, I had albums that none of my friends had, or they had albums that I didn't have, and we'd all bring blank tapes and then copy each other's albums. I mean, but we never thought we were stealing. But here's the thing, the justification, well, I wouldn't say justification, but the fact that I had a dual cassette deck in my bedroom. You know, oh, that means it's not wrong, because I was able to buy the tool to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's a really good example. Yeah. I mean, exactly. We've all, and look, I guess it just seems a bit easier. And I think you're right. People in this generation, yeah, you've grown up with it and they don't see that it's wrong. I think, I don't know, sometimes people feel music's a bit different from movies. You know, they feel, you know, movies are such a big production and there's so many people involved. But I guess with music, people just think, oh, it's a 3-minute song and there's not much work gone into it.
Yeah.
But,
Well, but so, then on the flip side too, you know, like what could happen is, you know, okay, you've got a guy that heard about King George, you know, or saw one of his videos, BitTorrented, you know, both his albums, and then finds out that you're playing, you know, a couple miles from his house. And then he's like, oh my God, you know, because now he's a total fan.
That's right. And wasn't the purpose of video clips and all that there for promotion? And why not have people rip it and share it? That's, you know, that's why I'm pretty cool with people, you know, if they like it. If I'm lucky enough for people to like it, then it's cool, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think most people are like me too, in that if they really love an album and stuff, even though they have a ripped copy of it, like, I will go to Best Buy and get it, like, properly, so I can have the cover, the insert, you know, and all that other stuff. I will get, like, you know, the actual copy of it. You know, if I like it enough. But, you know, speaking of that, and the fact that we were talking about U2 earlier, what do you think about what they did with Songs of Innocence?
Well, I mean, gee, the whole world reacted like this, as if they, like, killed someone.
I know. I was like, cool. I got a free U2 album. You know, I thought it was awesome.
Look, with bands like U2 and the way they push things, it's hit and miss. Like, you know, when they, you know, after Rock Boom Baby, they did that big Zoo TV tour. They took risks and had, you know, toured, played stadiums with big TV screens, and it was something different at the time. Everyone loved it, you know, and they reinvent themselves. And they kind of did this with this, you know, iTunes thing where they just put it on, you know, on your phone. It's like, I think, you know, social media, when they ride this wave of, you know, negativity and that, everyone just jumps on board. And I thought, wow, you know, I thought, why not? Who cares? It's there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny. You're like, people, you know, are happy to rip a song off and have no worries about it. But then you give them a song on your phone and it's like you've murdered.
Yeah, I don't know. To this day, I don't understand that. Because, I mean, like, U2 is one of the only bands that I would normally just go buy the CD so I could physically have it, you know,
yeah,
and stuff. Honestly, like, when I listened to it, I didn't think it was the best one, and so it's the only one I don't own physically, you know.
Yeah,
but I was really appreciative that was sitting on my phone.
I thought it's a great idea. I think, why not? I mean, and there's, you know, we get other things shoved down our throat in the current modern media, you know, and why not have okay music just being put on your phone, you know, like in the days of reality television and all this stuff that you switch the TV on and it's just got crazy stuff, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought, well, you know, why not? And I think it was a bit negative for them, but it got everyone talking. And there are people out there saying, who is U2? They don't even know them, you know. And now they do, again, the newer generation.
Exactly. Well, and another thing is, too, one of the things that I heard people, like, bitching and moaning about, basically, and it was bitching and moaning in every sense of the word, in my opinion, this applies to indie artists such as yourself, too. Do you think that it... Well, like I said, what I heard from a lot of people is that they thought it cheapened the album itself. Now, do you because it was given away? Now, do you subscribe to that theory?
Look, in my opinion, it didn't, but I could see why it could for some people. Because sometimes they feel they need to actively seek something and get it, versus, you know. But I think as time's gone on, there's a couple of songs that have sort of, you know, filtered through, and people have said, oh, actually, that song's not that bad, you know. And I think it hasn't, but I think I can see why it may have cheapened it for people, because they already start listening to the album with a negative mindset because of all the media attention. You know, it's like watching a movie, you know. I don't like reading reviews before I go see a film. You know, you want to make your own mind up. But,
yeah, exactly. I mean, my point on that, my opinion on that is it would be the same thing as if Disney, you know, didn't announce Episode 7 for Star Wars and then just all of a sudden dumped it on iTunes when it was done. People would be like, what the hell? You know, but they'll still watch it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, do you think as an indie artist, there's, you know, that there should be a price to your music, or do you think that if you want to freely distribute it, you should? And if so, do you think that that has any effect on what the listeners, you know, perceive as value?
That's a really interesting question, because sometimes it's really, there's, I mean, I think there should be a value on music because you work on something and you want to get some reward for it, and you need to, you know, live your life as well, and to have an income. But there really isn't a choice at times, because things, you know, people want it for free, they'll get it. But I think it's more about shoving it in their face for free versus, you know, having it available for them to download, you know, for free.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there should be a price. I mean, I look at the album, you know, I listen to Love Songs and Medicate. And I don't listen to it often, but I listened to it not long ago after so long properly. And it's like, wow, you know, all the hard work and time and spent and all that, you just feel that, you know, wish that you know, yeah, you know, it could be worth a lot more from a, you know, from that sense, from a, you know, income. But hey, it's all good.
Yeah, exactly. Well, do you think maybe that, like, you know, like artists should do, like, well, I don't know, like, go back to the U2 scenario. Do you think maybe U2 should have, instead of just throwing it on everybody's devices, do you think maybe they should have just said, it's here if you want it, and then go to iTunes and get it?
Yeah, but I don't think it would have gotten people talking as much, you know. I think their intention was probably to do, maybe not for it to be that negative, but to shove it, to rebel. I think Bono mentioned something about it, you know, just pushing the limit and getting the band to, you know, back in the people's faces. I think if you just sort of tell people, only the sort of true fans may have gone and looked for it and downloaded it, versus what they did, they may have converted maybe, you know, a few thousand more people by it. You know?
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I think with everything else, like the people that you hear about are the ones that have something negative to say, but then you have the silent majority that are extremely happy with it, that they don't talk about it, but they don't talk about it because they have nothing to complain.
Yeah. But you know what I think iTunes should do? They, you know, why not do that kind of regularly with indie artists or something, you know, like, you know, sort of have an independent artist section and say, here's a song of the month. It's free. Have a listen.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
You know, because, like, you know, it'd be amazing for them if they did that. Then, you know, like, you two are such a big machine. There's a lot of money and all that. But why not? It'd be good if they did that with independent artists, because you could give you the platform and the slingshot into, you know, getting your music out there, and it's only one song.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah. So. Exactly. And that's the way, you know, I think it should be. And it's funny that you mention that, because we are coming out with an all indie version of you know, an online store for artists, where you get to keep most of the profits, you know, profits and everything else too. But we are doing an artist of the month. We're also doing charts, you know, and you know, and stats and all that, and features, where we're tying it into our radio stations and our magazine.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So, and it's going to be called jgear.me. That's the actual web address. So,
okay, cool.
But yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and you're welcome to be on it if you want to. So,
would love to. So, absolutely. Cool.
But, that leads me to my next question, because that's kind of what, you know, why that's being created, you know, like on, you know, on the side and stuff. Do you think iTunes, Android, Spotify, so on, gives a fair shake to the unsigned artist?
I think, you know what, I think they, you know, things like iTunes and that, I think they do. I mean, because if you compare it to going back to traditional record deal scenario, I mean, you record your songs and, you know, iTunes will take their percentage, but the rest is yours. With a record label, it's not the case, as you know. Like, the rest of the money, once everyone's taken the piece of the pie, then goes back into paying off the actual recording, the debt. So I think that's where artists need to remind themselves. Maybe some of the younger artists don't even know how it used to be, but, you know, I think that it's a pretty good, you know, set up, in my opinion. I don't know exactly how all the streaming stuff works. I'm not sure if there's enough there given to the artists, but from an iTunes perspective and all that, I think it's really now about bands being able to break through the noise to get the song out there. And that's the challenges that I face as well. Without having a massive marketing budget and stuff like that. So,
well, that, and I think that's where social media is coming in.
Yeah.
You know, like Facebook, Twitter, Reverb Nation, us. I mean, the list goes on. And I mean, there's a ton of us out there now. You know? So, exactly. So, I mean, do you think that social media is achieving what unsigned artists want or need?
Well, I think it is. But also, because there's so many artists as well, you've got to try and break through that, like I said earlier, a bit of the noise or the what's going on around you. But, you know, you would never have, like, you know, if this was 15 years ago, there's no way at King George I could get my stuff out to people across the world, you know, on my own to a certain extent, you know. And that's where the beauty of it, you know. That's why, you know, we're lucky enough to have, you know, social media and the internet and all this, and, you know, Skype, look, you know, what we're doing now, to talk to each other, you know, and do this. So I think it's good to embrace it all.
Yeah. Well, because the cool thing is like, it's not like when, I don't know, like when I first started playing bars when I was, you know, 18, you know, I was 21 for 3 years, but, but the cool thing, but like, see, like you can have fans in Chicago, in New York, in London, Paris, Berlin, Vienna, Moscow that you'll never meet.
Yeah.
You know, that will wear your t-shirts, listen to your music, you know, tell their friends about you, tweet about you, Facebook about you, you know, so on and so forth, that you would have never met 15 years ago.
Exactly. And you know, there are people right across the globe who are, it's like, wow, they've actually listened to my song, you know. It's like, it's such a good feeling, you know, and to know that there are people out there, maybe under, you know, back in the day with record labels, you just don't know, people will be playing, maybe playing a song on the radio, but you don't have that connection other than being at a show, you know. But having said that, the radio is another thing, you know. It's really difficult to break through. In Australia, it's very difficult because
it's the same here too.
Population as well, and it's really hard to break through. I think that's probably, which probably we haven't spoken much about radio today, but I think radio is a really big challenge, like, to get stuff on the radio.
Well, they're very particular about what they want to play. You wanted something funny. I never worked there, but I helped design a website for a cluster of radio stations, like a template so they can use over and over and over again and stuff, back in 2008, I believe it were. No, late 2007. And in the meeting, they had gotten a CD from a 14-year-old kid that they refused to play, and they were tired of him sending stuff over, and that kid was Justin Bieber.
Wow.
It was his mom. His mom was sending CDs all over the country to every radio station.
Yeah.
So, and it was no.
Yeah.
So
it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But here's the thing too, I mean, around the, you know, now there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of unsigned online stations, you know.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. There's also podcasts, like you can give your stuff to podcasters, and it's coming to, I think it's getting to the point where they're having the more of the influence than the stations are. I think radio's actually dying.
I think so as well. There's a shift, isn't it? And it's good because people are in control of what they want to listen to.
Yep, exactly.
And, yeah, and, you know, the more I listen to a lot of mainstream radio here, and sometimes, like, I'll shift through all the main stations and I can't hear a song, you know?
Yeah.
Everyone's talking, you know, and whether it be, you know, commercials or just talking and I don't know, sometimes that's why the beauty of the internet and listening to podcasts or internet radio, you listen to what you want.
Yes.
You know?
When you want.
When you want.
Exactly. Now, do you, you know, it's good that the cool thing that you brought up about that is too, is the talking in radio. Do you think that, like, I mean, I think radio's kind of stuck in a rut where they're like, oh yeah, if we get a couple of good personalities and we just let them talk, and then, you know, every once in a while we'll play a song. You know, I mean, if you notice, radio is kind of doing stuff like that now because of the backlash of the podcasters and the streaming radio stations and all that other stuff. I mean, do you think radio just needs to go where it's just music and then commercials to pay the bills and then more music?
Yeah, but I guess it's a reflection on society. I mean, it's just a common routine. You have morning radio, people talking, and catering for people who are driving to work and talking about reality shows and all that stuff. And then after 9 a.m. when everyone's in the office, then they'll play some songs. And then back again at 4 p.m., 5 p.m. when people are driving home, back to talking. And it's just designed for that, the mainstream lifestyle of work. And I don't know. I just think, you know, there should be, you know, more music. I mean, that's what I love. But then again, you know, we're musicians and that's what we love. And, you know, the people, it might not be a reflection of what people actually want out there. I don't know. Maybe they want to hear people talking about weird stories and stuff like that. But I don't know. it's such a tough one.
It's just gonna be an ever evolving industry, I think.
So, yeah, it is. Yeah.
So, well, what does King George have coming up? I mean, now that I mean, you've got the album, you know, you've got the album out. It's been out for a while. 904 just totally kicks ass. The video is just as cool, in my opinion. So everybody check that video out. But what do you have coming up now? I mean, we talked about you writing new music and stuff. I mean, are you gonna ever, like, just go tour the world or anything coming up? Or,
well, I wish, but it's a bit, touring is a bit difficult because of, you know, being in Australia and getting overseas, and there's so much behind it. But I think it wouldn't mind going back overseas next year. But I think writing's going to be the key thing for me next. Is really, I'm starting to get into a bit of a writing phase again. And, you know, you never know, I might head back into the studio and maybe record a single or something like that. I think, you know, and the video for 904 was a lot of work. I worked with Dylan Pierce, who was the director for it. And I think that probably might be the last video from the album, unless, you know, something comes up in my mind thinking, oh, let's just do another video. But I think it might be time for some new stuff and sort of go from there.
Nice, nice. Now, where can we find you online?
If you go to kinggeorge.com.au, that's the website, and there's links there to back to Facebook and YouTube as well. And, yeah, that's where you need to go to find King George.